You're listening to Talking Baseball with Ed Randall, presented by MLB.com. He's Ed Randall. He's talking baseball. What more do you need?
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, Big Ed and Nora's baby boy, and welcome back to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. When it opened 25 years ago in Baltimore, Camden Yards transformed the landscape of Major League ballparks forever. Little did anyone know at the time. The Orioles said they were just trying to build a great little ballpark. What the city got and the country got later in Cleveland and Texas and Denver and Seattle and Milwaukee and San Francisco and San Diego, the children of Camden Yards, was a whole lot more than that. It might have even been beyond the imagination of our guest, the genius architect and urban planner who oversaw development of Camden Yards, the renowned Janet Marie Smith. What an honor it is for me to have you on the show. So, Governor William Donald Schaefer tells 50,000 people in Memorial Stadium on May 8, 1988, that they're getting a new ballpark, and they weren't in a very good mood after opening that season with 21 consecutive losses. But it was apparent, Janet Marie, that the city needed a new ballpark.
Well, it was certainly obvious when the Colts left town. You know, the Colts and Orioles had shared Memorial Stadium, and both teams had said to the city, this is inadequate. It's not going to serve our purposes for the decades ahead. And, you know, I don't think anyone was pulling the city's leg. It wasn't just leverage. It was the truth. And so certainly once the football team was gone, Governor Schaefer, who was then mayor, was like, well, okay, well, we better get with the program here. What are we going to do to make sure that the Orioles make a long-term commitment?
What was your vision originally?
Well, I jumped on the wagon after Larry Lucchino and Governor Schaefer got this thing rolling. So I was just thrilled with what I saw. I mean, as a student of cities, I had often admired the city of Baltimore and how it had transformed itself. And when I first heard that the Orioles were leaving Memorial Stadium to go downtown, I thought, wow, well, there goes Baltimore once again, inserting an activity into the heart of their urban center that'll draw 3 million people. You know, they'd already built the aquarium and the science center and the convention center. So I thought it was just a phenomenal move from a planning perspective. And then as I learned about Larry Lucchino's vision that this be an old-fashioned ballpark and that it have the kind of intimacy and architectural qualities that the older parks like Ebbets and Fenway and Wrigley and Old Comiskey had. I thought, wow, well, the stars just really align. That's amazing, you know, because that is an urban park. Those older parks were of their neighborhoods, were of the city, and that's what Larry wanted for Baltimore.
He said, quote, I've had one good original idea in my 38 years in baseball, unquote.
That's and Larry, right?
Right. And what he was proposing was truly, at the time, preposterous. A new stadium with an old-time feel.
Oh, yeah. There were people thought we were crazy, you know. They're like, why would you spend new money building this old-fashioned thing? Why would you keep the warehouse? Why not have views of the harbor, you know? So beyond the questions of the appropriateness of the investment and the longevity of the park were questions about its style and where we were going. And I've often said that our secret weapon was Frank Robinson, who was manager at the time, manager of those 21 losses. Well, not all 21 losses on his watch. But anyway, that's a different story. Frank Robinson had played in the older parks. And, of course, he's Frank Robinson, so he could speak with credibility to what it meant for a city to have a unique park and how much more interesting it made the game and how much more compelling it made him as a player to know that field and to have the roar of the crowd be sort of right there in your ear the way the older parks had. And that made a huge difference to us as we worked with HOK and the Maryland Stadium Authority to concoct what we now know as Oriole Park at Camden Yards.
You were told you can't turn back the clock, and your response was, well, we'll see about that.
You know, I think important to recognize what else was going on in America at a time. You know, we were moving back into cities, and we were starting to look at urban life as being more interesting in the kind of diverse, mixed-use, entertainment-oriented environment that now defines so many of America's cities. lent itself well to baseball being a part of that. And I'm often very pleased when I look around the country and I see how many other teams and cities have followed the lead of Maryland and put their ballparks in the center of cities and used it as a revitalization tool.
And this was counter to the prevailing trends at the time, a ballpark design of oval stadiums with half moons of wasted space. These were the so-called multi-purpose stadiums, and you said multi-purpose means multi-purpose-less.
Well, that's kind of the way it felt after a while. And I also think from a planning perspective, the notion of putting them, you know, where you had all these freeways diving into it, ended up not being nearly as good access as the traditional street grid environment of an urban center.
And people on the project, I understand, were not allowed to use the S word for stadium.
That's right. Larry Lucchino banned that right off the bat. No stadium. We were not building a stadium. We were building a ballpark. If he said it once, he said it 10,000 times.
And I say 10,000 times, thank you very much. Let's talk about you personally. When were you first inspired by design? What was the facility that years ago may have caught your eye?
Well, that's a good question. I think that what I've always been inspired by are cities themselves, not any one edifice. And I think that's probably the thing that, if I brought anything to the table, and a table full of talent with, you know, HOK there with their you know, extensive experience in sports, I think Larry used me to try to bring the city into it. And so much of what we were trying to do at Camden Yards was to say, how can we take this formula for baseball and how can we look at the older parks and figure out what made them so much more interesting than what we've seen in the last generation? And much of it was that the city shaped the park. You know, the size of the block created the shape of both the seating stands and the baseball field, and the scoreboard itself was a part of the composition with the downtown skyline. And so having, like a lot of baseball fans going to a lot of parks, what I loved was that no matter what city you were in, the ballpark and the game and the smells and the songs and the flavors of, you know, the personalities of the people there reflected the city they were in. So I think that's always been kind of more interesting to me than any particular one building.
Jana Marie Smith is with us as we celebrate, and truly it is a celebration, the 25th anniversary of Camden Yards. She is the genius behind its design. With regard to the construction, it took a little less than 3 years as these old railroad yards became a ballpark unlike any that had ever been seen before.
Well, that was a blessing, too, because the site that the state of Maryland chose, which was in the heart of downtown Baltimore, had a number of buildings on it that had many of them had been built in the 40s and were fairly light industry and not of any particular architectural significance. Of course, we have the warehouse that was saved. But it gave HOK another year to plan, and that's something really important. Oftentimes, when projects of this scale are funded, once you get the green light, it's just pedal to the metal and go. And you can only compress construction so much. And so it puts a lot of pressure on the architects and engineers to do their drawings much faster than maybe one would like to, because the only thing you can cut out is think time. And I've always thought that one of the blessings we had is that HOK is our architects, led by Joe Spear, and RTKL, who did the master plan that, was the inspiration for Utah Street itself coming through the ballpark and being part of the concourse. All of that came about because we had time to think. And the Maryland Stadium Authority, led by Herb Belgrad and Bruce Hoffman, were just fabulous. It's supporting that. You know, there was none of this, no time out. Let's just keep going. It was always like, if there's a better way, let's talk about it.
But there was, though, a battle over the warehouse.
Well, there was a lot of controversy over the warehouse. There were certainly people, including the esteemed writer John Steadman of the Evening Sun, who felt it should be torn down because, indeed, it blocks the views down Conway Street of the harbor, but only if you've got, you know, only if you've got blinders on and are standing on the axis of Conway Street. And I think the team itself, our design and construction team of the Stadium Authority, the Orioles, HOK, and Barton Mallow, who oversaw the construction, all were very enamored with the idea of keeping the warehouse, but there were questions. Was it going to cost more to keep that space and renovate it than to build new space in the ballpark? What were we going to do with the extra square footage? It has fairly low floor-to-ceiling heights. Could we get the mechanical systems in there? So it was controversial in that it wasn't clear. You know, was it of interest? Yeah, there were a lot of people who were like, yeah, that's pretty cool, 1,000-foot long, 50-foot-wide building, that's pretty cool.
And the warehouse played a key role in laying out the symmetrical dimensions of the ballpark rather than looking at the warehouse as an intended target.
Oh, yeah, no, it was great having, you know, I've said this so many times that I'm sure I've said it to you, too. The warehouse gave us a clue to everything. You know, it gave us a clue to the height of the ballpark, gave us a clue to the materials, the colors, the asymmetry of the playing field, the tall wall in right field, the stands curling around and left. You know, once the decision was made to keep the warehouse, I don't want to say all the pieces just fell into place because that's making it sound too simple, but it gave us a reference point for how we should handle these other things.
And the only person that has hit the warehouse with a batted ball was Ken Griffey Jr., estimated 465 feet during the 1993 Home Run Derby prior to the All-Star Game. There have been more than 2,000 regular season games and playoff games at Camden Yards, and no one has hit the warehouse.
I know, isn't that crazy?
Isn't that crazy?
Well, what's crazy about it is since Ken Griffey Jr. hit it in 1993, his second season, I think at the time we thought, oh, okay, well, maybe it'll happen in every other year. So here we are in, 24 years have passed? And unlike Utah Street, where, you know, an average of, 4 to 6 balls get hit onto Utah Street every year, which is kind of perfect. The warehouse remains elusive. And it's kind of interesting because we put shatterproof glass on the lower floors of the warehouse thinking, it could get popped any time.
And the shatterproof glass is still there.
Yes, it is.
One of the wonderful aspects of it is elevating the bullpens. And in preparing for this interview, I understand that came out of a fan forum.
It sure did. It was an idea from a fan that we stacked them beyond the outfield fence with one being higher than the other so that you could see whoever was warming up for either team. Mentioning that is also indicative of the way Larry Lucchino goes about doing, any project like this, and he was vigilant about having us listen to our fans and listen to our constituencies. So we'd go out and speak to clubs, we'd take tours, we'd have these ballpark forums. And it was really amazing the kind of input we got. We would often have staff meetings, and whatever the groundskeeper had to say was just as important as the ballpark operations people because, we're all fans. That was one of the hallmarks of Larry Lucchino and Charles Steinberg and their approach to running that club is we are all fans. So every one of us should and does have something to say about these matters.
And you got the fans so close to the action.
Well, at the time, it seemed crazy close, because we were used to these round parks with all this foul territory that could host a football field. So it really did seem very different. It wasn't the smallest because Wrigley and Fenway still, at that time, laid claim to that. But it was just amazing to see the difference when you didn't have to handle football.
But also, the stadium is completed. It was breathtaking the first time that I saw it, and I was there for the first regular season game working the game. But it revitalized all of downtown Baltimore.
Well, it did play a big role in changing both the definition and perception of downtown. And as I said a moment ago, you know, you had 3 million people a year coming in those early years, and that was really amazing. And you got to hand it to William Donald Schaefer, who recognized that, look, if downtown Baltimore can handle 200,000 people coming in and out of downtown every day to go to work, it can surely handle, you know, 45 to 50,000 people for a baseball game coming in an off-peak time. And it was really impressive when you look back at the infrastructure cost for Oriole Park at Camden Yards, because it was near nothing. We built one off-ramp. We spent like $6 million on the roadways. And this was an era where teams were accustomed to having the city spend as much on the infrastructure as they did on the facility itself. But only one off-ramp was recommended by our traffic consultants, which is a testament to what a good, you know, a good urban environment and its mass transit can do.
And you changed the way we think about the fan experience and the role of architecture in sports.
Well, you know, it's like it's the 10th man, you know. In baseball, the park plays a really significant role. And we'd lost that in the multipurpose era. And so it's wonderful to get that back, and it's wonderful to see them so celebrated. And what I enjoy about having this conversation with you here today, 25 years later, is I think we all had our fingers crossed that we were designing and planning something that would last for several generations. We knew it could structurally. The question was, could it sort of spiritually, you know, would we still be in love with it 25 years later?
Janet Marie Smith with us on the occasion of the 25th anniversary of Camden Yards. She built it. I'm interested in knowing, is there a moment at Camden Yards that you treasure since it opened? Is it Cal Ripken going by Lou Gehrig? Is it Pope John Paul that was there? The Cuban national team? Is there one moment that stands out?
Well, I guess for me, the moment that will always be a standout was that first game. And, you know, of course, it was a beautiful afternoon, and Rick Sutcliffe pitched a shutout game, and it was a short game, and it was over about rush hour, so we were testing this whole theory. And, you know, we'd had exhibition games there before, you know, only two, but still we'd had the exhibition games. But this one counted. And I think, you know, I just speaking for myself, I just held my breath. I mean, though we'd flushed every toilet, we'd fired up every concession stand, we'd had 30,000 people in for the exhibition games, this one counted. And, you know, you just wanted to see 9 innings of Major League Baseball completed and know it was locked in the books before you let your breath out. And I can remember when it was over, you know, just giving Larry Lucchino the biggest hug out of just relief, you know, just
sure.
Relief. And, of course, I felt that way about our whole team. In fact, our team of the Maryland Stadium Authority and HOK and Barton Mallow and the many engineering firms involved we threw ourselves a 25th reunion a few weeks ago, and Peter Angelos was so generous about hosting us at Camden Yards, and we just thought how special that 25 years later we still have that much emotional attachment, not just to the place but to each other, and what a good team it was.
What an incredible day that was, opening day. George Herbert Walker Bush throughout the first pitch. Rick Sutcliffe, as you mentioned, beat Cleveland and Charles Nagy 2-0 in 2 hours and 2 minutes. Thank you very much. And the team started 12-2 at home that season. And you immediately forgot, Janet Marie, about Memorial Stadium. This had just been a transformative moment.
It really had been, and we, you know, listen, Memorial Stadium holds so many wonderful memories, and we brought a lot of that with us, both in spirit and the artifacts that were appropriate, from the foul pole in right field to the welcome home sign that graced the first base entrance. And yet once once we moved into Camden Yards, it felt like home. And I think that was the most important thing for the team, for the city, and for the state, was that fans looked at it and said, you know what, it feels like home.
And it was for so many, drawing $3.5 million in its first season, 40% more than the last season in Memorial Stadium, and drew $3 million plus the first 10 seasons, excluding 1994. And then you did work at Turner Field in Atlanta, helping to renovate that. And I think of you every time I see Fenway Park, and the vision, the idea that you could put people behind the monster in left field. And that's another one of your singular achievements.
Well, that was working with Larry Lucchino again. It was just so much fun to have been invited to be a part of that team after he and John Henry and Tom Warner bought the club. And, you know, as Larry said then, he said, you know, he called me, I guess, in December of 2001 when they were bidding on the club, and he said, well, we're wondering if we're crazy. We want to save Fenway. And everyone else wants to propose a new ballpark. Would you be willing to take a look at these plans we've got and see, are we nuts? So, you know, of course, Fenway in many ways was the model for Camden Yards. And I've often said it's a little bit about that old, like that old adage of life imitating art and art imitating life. You know, we got to Fenway and we're like, okay, well, what can we do? what can we do that we've learned from Camden Yards? And so, you know, putting turnstiles on Yawkey Way and building seats out over the Green Monster and appending the two buildings that flank Fenway so that, like the warehouse supports Camden Yards, the Geno building and the former Fenway garage and outfield support Fenway Park, or they're all lessons learned, and we just applied them in different ways.
In our remaining moments, this is now Camden Yards, the 10th oldest stadium in use, but it's not showing its age.
Well, give credit to the Maryland Stadium Authority and to Peter Angelos and his family for their focus on keeping that park in such outstanding shape. I was so pleased when Mr. Angelos asked me to come back and work for him several years ago to oversee the improvements for the 20th anniversary at Camden Yards. And I was so impressed, though I've, you know, of course, go there every year as a fan, being a season ticket holder. Nonetheless, it was just so enlightening to be there on a day-to-day basis and to see what kind of effort and investment goes in every day of the year into, you know, keeping the steel painted, keeping the mechanical systems up, recently replacing the field lights with LED. I mean, there's just been a real focus to making certain that it has stayed in sort of the top tier condition, which was something that was very important when Larry Lucchino was negotiating the lease with the state, is that it not just be shiny and bright year one, but that it stay that way, that it was going to be a reflection on the city, the state, and the club. And they've taken great care of it.
You are one of the transformative figures in Major League Baseball history, and I believe that had you gotten your hands on Ebbets Field, that the Dodgers would still be in Brooklyn. Maybe that was a dream project.
I sure had fun at Dodger Stadium, so I can't, I can't deny that.
When you see Camden Yards now, what goes through your mind?
Oh, golly. You know, honestly, I think I just love being there and seeing how old shoe comfortable it is to so many fans this many years later. You know, it's not mine anymore. It's kind of like sending your kids off to college or something. You know, where they grow up, you turn the keys in, all of a sudden it's not yours. It's not your private construction site anymore. It belongs to the fans. And so, in a way, it's a joy. It's a relief. I'm not responsible for anything. I can just go and enjoy a baseball game. What could be better?
And so many millions have, thanks to you. What an honor it is to have you on my show. I thank you for your time and for your
thank
kindness.
Thank you for asking me.
So that'll do it for Janet Marie Smith and myself on MLB.com. If you were on the move, thanks for the ride. And thanks for listening to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball.